It's episode 81, everybody. Welcome to the show. Epilogue Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Head. Welcome to the show. This episode is brought to you by FetchClass.com. FetchClass.com is a teaching and learning website where you can teach and be taught in a one-on-one video conference. It's free to join. It's safe and secure. And it's safer than driving. And it's easier than driving. Get on it, everybody. FetchClass.com. InsightRecorders.com is a place to now get download codes from. If you're a band and you play live shows, a lot of you do, and you want to sell your album, you need download codes, because download codes is a thing, is a piece of paper. You print it out, people go to a website, and they can then download your record. You don't need a website. You could just use the Insight Recorders website, and it'll be styled like your band, and it'll be a place for you to download your album, your records, anything you want. InsightRecorders.com for more information. Affiliate programs, everybody. This is important to the show. Affiliate programs is a place you go to the Epilogue.ca website, and on the right side are all these banners. And these banners are affiliate programs that I am presently involved with. One of them is Banggood.com. Click on that banner. You bookmark the banner, and every time you shop, you'll be supporting the show by going to Banggood.com and buying stuff from at a fraction of the price. It's like I said, it's the Amazon crazy uncle of Amazon, or the crazy brother of Amazon. Your crazy uncle of Amazon. I don't know what I'm talking about. Also, musician's friend, everybody, same thing. Click on the banner, bookmark the banner, support the show. Musician's friend has deals upon deals upon deals. It's a great place to shop for musicians' stuff. And another place to go shop for musician stuff is at Amazon.com.ca or .co.uk. So whether you're from the United States, America, or Canada, you can shop on Amazon, support the show, and get cool deals and cool stuff. And I already see people are buying stuff, and it's very cool. I see somebody bought a chorus pedal for their guitar and a patch cable and stuff. This is all cool stuff. Thank you so much. You are supporting the show, and I really appreciate that. Patreon.com/Epilogue is a place to sponsor the show, pledge to the show. It's like a monthly contribution. You can pledge as much as little as you want. You can pledge $1 a month. You can pledge $10 a month. And what you'll be doing is supporting my gas fees and my hosting fees to the website where I host this monster. Like, for instance, today I'm driving down to Toronto. I'm going to be driving for an hour there and an hour back to talk for 45 minutes. Okay. That's what I do. That's my love of the pod. Okay. Podcast, for those who don't know what I'm talking about. If you're on the Epilogue.ca, go click on the Epilogue.ca shop button. It's up in the menu there. You can pre-order my acoustic album. You can buy a t-shirt. T-shirts are running out, so everybody get on board now while they are still here in the box. I'm looking right now. There's a few of them in there. Hi, guys. How's it going? Also, you can purchase my Foursquare, my band's discography. It's over 50 songs. I think I counted something like 72 songs. And you can purchase that for $20. Every song Foursquare ever put out, everybody. Okay? Like the show on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/epiloguepod. Follow me on Twitter, @SimonHead666. Subscribe, rate, and review to iTunes. This is kind of crucial, too, because what this does is it really helps the show out where it sits in the ranks in iTunes. And I'd love to be in that What's Hot banner, so then it puts me in front of people who never even consider about listening to the show. And then I get strangers. It's not just friends of mine listening to the show or family relatives. It's actually strangers. You know, I think strangers listen to the show. Regardless, please go there. Give it some stars. Give it a nice review. And give it a crappy review, but as long as you give it 5 stars, that's all we care about. Okay, everybody. Here's the part where I introduce the guest. Steve Rawls from the band Belvedere is my guest today. He is the guitar player of Belvedere. And this is a standoff. Two bands that have been around for well over 20 years. Steve and I first met in 1994. I think it was, when I recorded Belvedere's first real demo or first real recording. We were all young. Like, I think it was like 24. I think Steve was like maybe 18, 19. And it was 3 hours of recording. And then eventually Belvedere went on to do several albums. You know, like, they were a real band. And they have just put out a new album called Revenge of the Fifth. And it just came out Actually, as I'm recording this, it came out on May 5th. Go figure. So, but you can go to iTunes and sample the record. It's called Revenge of the Fifth, and the band's called Belvedere. And I have a special treat for y'all. I'm going to play one song for you, and you're going to love this song. The song is called Delicatessen. Before I play that, let me tell you that Belvedere is going to be playing all over this great country and all over Europe. We mentioned a little bit about it because there weren't really solid plans about a month ago when we recorded this interview. But now they're going to be playing like in Ontario in the middle of May. They're going to Europe and they're playing a bunch of shows. I'm going to play a song now, Delicatessen by Belvedere. Punchy. Belvedere, Delicatessen on the new Revenge of the Fifth album. Oh, good job, everybody. Isn't that great? It's a great song. Okay, so let's now get into that conversation that I had with Mr. Stephen Rawls of Belvedere. You know, there's another time, but you might not remember it. It was Grose Rock, 2005. Mm-hmm. My band Foursquare filled in for Trigger Happy on that tour opening for 10 Foot Pole.
Absolutely.
You guys played, and then we didn't like actually connect until the very end of the night. And I remember one of your guys had a bottle of absinthe. That's all I do remember.
Right. That sounds about right for that time.
Yeah, it's been a very long time, and I feel like I've been following you for 20 years. Your career is in music and your band and the success and just sticking at it and taking a break and everything. It's just, it's a fun ride, huh?
Yeah, it's been great, and thanks for saying that, man. Yeah, it's cool, because I remember like the first, you know, the first kind of incarnation of Belvedere, and like, you know, it was me and Dan and Brock and I remember like recording in Todd's basement or something like that. I think that's
right.
Where I met you. And it was short, you know, but you know,
it was, I think it was 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, we probably got a lot done back then in 3 hours. I can't do shit now in 3 hours, but back then, boy, we could record a 15-song album.
I don't think you can make a pot of coffee and like sit behind the board in 3 hours if you're recording, you know, like look at us. I mean, it's insane. But I remember that because I hit record a little late, but I remember I had this recording studio that I used to put in the back of my van. I used to take it all over Canada and I used to record bands in their house. And to me, it was great because there was a time in between computers and where studios were too expensive. There's this nice little gap for me to jump in and record every band under the sun. And I came across Belvedere for the first time. And we recorded for 3 hours, I think, because it was part of a day. And I can't even remember what band that was. It was another Brock band. And it was so much like so many bands. Like I could have moved to Calgary.
Oh yeah, at that time there were so many bands recording. Was it Rebel Young Republican?
I believe it was. Whoa! You
Yeah.
pulled that one out. Yes,
I
it
didn't get into
was.
the drugs too bad. I still remember some shit.
Well, Brock always used to hook up the recording sessions, and for that he would get a discount. And we would then record bands in whatever house he lived in. And at one point that I can't remember what he had a name for every house he lived in. And I can't remember that house, but he had the Blue House, and I think he lived in the Wee House. Was it pretty? Yeah. And we record bands all in that basement of the Blue House. And that's a pretty that's a long time ago, man. 20 years ago. Think of that. What
20
happened?
plus years ago. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're still doing good and still involved in all the music stuff. That's great.
Me you. It's very cool. I mean, it almost feels like you should get a trophy or something, like, you know, like an award, you know, like a medal to
A
wear.
little $20 Timex watch, you know. Boy, we really made it, you know, 20 years. You got your 20 years in punk rock.
That's what they do in like when you're in the big corporations, right? Because they
That's
give you
right.
like a coin or something to say, welcome to the old times land. Your key to your you have a bigger locker now. It's over there, you know. Yeah. How about, you know, did you ever take like real, you must have taken some real jobs in the day, right? Like,
Yeah, I did. I did a bunch of stuff. Well, you know, when you're out there as much as as I was, it was you took whatever, you know, everything from delivering pizza to, you know, I was running coffee shops to you know, trying to do sales and construction. I worked at a liquor store. Like I had a job for every year, you know, that we were on the road because you could never keep. It was actually the pizza joint was the only place that kept me around for 4 years because they didn't care. You know, I did my job when I was there and I gave them lots of notice and you know, whatever. But yeah, I feel like I've got a pretty wild resume. But
Yeah, you
that's
could do
true though.
anything, right? You could deliver pizza and put up a wall and
Like I'm not really great at anything, but I'm pretty good at a lot of things.
Yeah. I think the idea of what you're saying is that you couldn't get a career job. Career jobs would be getting in the way of rock and roll. And that was always a
No, it's
tough thing,
true.
right? Always a tough
It's
thing.
true. Yeah, and you know, I toured pretty heavily until about the end of 2011, and then I mostly stopped. Sorry, I mostly stopped. My other band, This Is a Standoff, was touring. We were 4 or 5 months, and then I was doing this acoustic record, and I was out there for probably 3 or 4 months, and I was just all over the place. I was finally just at the end of that year, I was just kind of had enough. And so I still really love playing, but just not 250 shows a year.
Yeah, I've been talking to a bunch of people over the past year, and a lot of them say, you know, I don't really need to do that anymore. It's not part of sleeping on the floor at 40 something years old isn't it's punk, but it's not fun. And
No.
you got to kind of gain, you know, and your whole life has been playing music and touring. Did you ever have any trickiness about like, did you ever have that moment? And it's cliche and wrong to say, and maybe take it for the spirit, but it was like time to just grow up. Is there a time in your life like,
Yeah, I still have that bug though. That's the thing. The problem with me is that like the you know, even when I say, "Oh, I only want to play 30 shows a year," or "I only want to play 50 shows a year," as soon as as soon as some offer comes in, I'm like, "Oh man, you know, how can I take off this year?" And I'm like, or you know, "How can I take off this week?" You know, and it's like, no, like, you know, I work at a job, I have a kid, I have a wife, I have a house. Like you know, I can't just but that never leaves me. And I still wonder whether I have grown up when it comes to this stuff, because I still feel quite a lot like I did when I was 18. And I don't mean that in just of how I am maturity wise, but just how I am about being in a band. I just feel like every great tour we do or every great show or great band we play with, I still feel like that little kid. And I don't know if that's a normal thing, but I still feel like that little 15-year-old kid going like, man, this is awesome. And So it's all still very exciting for me. I just can't, you know, be out there all the time.
Yeah. And you do graphic design. Is that your, are you still doing stuff like that?
I do web development. Yeah. Yeah. I do coding. So yeah.
Now, what do you think about all these new, awesome, easy click and point website stuff? Like, what do you think of that?
Well, I think everything has a place for everything, right? Yeah. So if a $500 website is what you feel your company is, wants and gets, I mean, you generally get what you pay for, right?
Yeah.
I work for a company that we do custom sites and they're a little more elaborate than maybe the template sort of cut and paste stuff that some people do. And that's fine either way. I mean, not everybody has, 10, 20 grand to do a website. Yeah. So it's, you have to take that into account. So, but I totally get it either way.
The other funny part is when I just got into web design over the past 3 years. So I'm sort of web 2.0 guy. So everything comes responsive ready. And when you make it, it's good on your phone. It's good. But there was times like when I first got into it, I go, wait a minute, I got to build this for the phone as well as the computer. And wait a minute, is this working on any of these, and then until someone figured out how to make that work, make a responsive website. But
sure. No, I've only been at it for a couple of years. I just got out of school with it. So I happened to get into it when responsive design was fairly, I wouldn't say widespread because it's not like it's been around forever, but we jumped right into the media queries right away. So that really, that's all I know is making it look good for everything.
So have you always been a techie guy? Like, is this something like you've always been into? Is this was past years?
No, I mean, I did HTML in like 95. Like I was in college and I was, like bare bones, HTML for dummies. And I did a bit of that for a while, but I never got really that much. Not that there was much to know back then. There wasn't a lot out there. When I was touring with This Is a Standoff, my buddy John that's in that band, he's been doing web stuff for a long time, and his company Melodic Creative has been around for a while, and they've done some really great stuff. And it always just I kind of keyed into the fact that he was touring all the time but still able to work.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately he had to be back in Toronto. When we kind of split things up, he wanted to focus on his business. It was tough to be on the road and doing that. But I thought, that was a really great thing that he did. And I was just kind of, I wanted to find a career direction. And so I went into that.
Yeah, it's still close enough. There's artistic integrity. There's the, I guess, independence-ish, where you can kind of choose your hours and you have a laptop. You can still jump in the van or jump on a plane and go play a show and still not let people down,
sure.
Like if you worked at Loblaws, that'd be a big problem.
Yeah. Well, I do, I don't do too much freelance stuff, a little bit, but I'm at work, 40, 50 hours a week. And like I say, I've got a 6-month-old.
Oh, wow. So, being a dad, how rad is that, huh? Like making a little person.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah. His name's Brody and he's great. He's such a funny little kid and just, I don't know. He's just, it kind of blows your mind a little bit. It's a whole new ball game, that's for sure.
Well, you feel how is your because we were all fuck ups at one point, right? Like, how do you feel like that? I don't want to influence my son. My son's just learning the guitar and he's learning half of the Green Day album, American Idiot. Yeah. And there's a certain point in my life where I'm like, why don't you just go be a lawyer? Like go, go be a doctor, it'll be less heartache and less stress in your life. And
right. Well, we're just trying to sleep a little bit right now. That's where we're at. But maybe when he's a little older, I'll kind of start having that. I'll give you a call and ask you what you did.
You know what? They'll find what they need to do and they'll love what they do. And there's a certain part of, I'm really proud of him because I purposely didn't push him into it. I thought it was like you got to learn. I have 100 guitars, I don't have 100, but I have lots of guitars around. And he wanted to pick it up and he wanted to do it. And so I gave him some chords and he went, he learned a Beatles song in my life, there's sevenths in there and stuff, right? Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. But,
I think he's really surrounded by music. we got a couple of turntables this last year and He just playing records is sort of a normal thing around here. And I'm downstairs jamming, and he's always seeing guys from the band show up here, or like I'm dad's leaving for Thursday night jam or something. So it's I come from a family that's mostly into sports, and so we do a lot of that kind of stuff too. And so we love football around here, but music and punk has always been a big thing. And I hope he picks up some of that, whatever that is. I just want him to be happy doing it. But yeah, it's a trip. It's awesome. I can't believe I didn't do it earlier.
The idea of just being not being a dick and kids, you know what I mean? Like just don't be a dick and let your kids lead by example, because there's certain things that, that as a parent, I would never have listened to if I my parents told me certain things, you know what I mean? Like, so you have to sort of like censor yourself by saying, oh, you can't explain. I can't explain it. I know, but you'll get there, Matt. And it kind of puts purpose to life. And we're pro babies because we have them. But some people, like I was talking to people, like a guy the other day, he's like, I'll never have kids. I'll never want to have a kid. Like, were you ever that, like at one point in your life, or?
Well, I don't know if I was quite there, but I was real close. Like we were real close. We were on the fence there for a long time, and I thought I was going the other way, but then we just said, yeah, let's do it. I don't know if age played a part into it. I'm going to be 40 this year. I think we all kind of, everybody in our age group kind of goes, gets towards that part and goes, okay, well, I was always on the fence, but we're kind of running out of time here. So it wasn't quite there yet, but I definitely, we just decided it was time to go for it. So why not?
Oh, good for you, man. Good for you. Good for you. So Belvedere's back together.
Yep.
What spurred? I know that you've been doing kind of shows and you're kind of like playing around, and but what really got you back together to actually do an album? What was that? What
Well,
happened?
I mean, getting back together again, I mean, at the time I was really touring a lot with This Is a Standoff, but honestly, it was Jay Clough in Guelph that kind of said, look, you guys need to get your shit together and play a show. And so he said, well, let's do the Opera House. And I said, well, that's bigger than anything we've ever done on our own. Why would we think that we could do that then? He said, no, it'll be great. It's been 7 years. I'm sure it'll be awesome. So we did that show, and we just started planning stuff, and that spurred it. He started like going, I reached out to a couple of guys and he said, what do you think? You think we'd be into this? We kind of put the past in the past, and everybody said, yeah. So we did, and we did a Calgary weekend that weekend. We did Groz Rock in 2012, and then we went to Brazil. And so we thought that was going to be it. We thought we'd do our 12 shows and that would be it. But then, more stuff just came up. We played with Grade and Monin out in Guelph. And then we went to, where did we go next? Oh, we did a 2 week tour in Europe, and then we went to Japan, and it was just like all this stuff just kind of kept going. And it was really great because it wasn't all at once. It was like every couple months something really cool happened. You don't want to be away from your kids and families and stuff, but it was good enough that we could go away for 4 or 5 days most of the time and make it work. And then as time went on, we kind of went, okay, we've passed the reunion stage. It seems like we're all getting along really good. I've got some songs, you've got some songs. Let's see if we can figure it out. And we did.
You're kind of following the steps of Good Riddance, because that's exactly what Good Riddance did.
Is that right? Yeah.
It's
Were you talking to Russ?
I was talking, well, Russ and Chuck, and I worked for them. I was last year, the year before, when they came up to Canada. But I got this weird phone call. I think it was like 3 years, 2, 3 years ago. And it's like, this band that used to be on Fat Records is trying to maybe come up to Canada and play Yonge Dundas Square for Canadian, or for North by Northeast. Would you be interested? I'm like, well, can I ask the name of the band? They're like, no, it's a secret. I'm like, okay, let me think. Who this be? And obviously, because they'd call me through them, I'm like, I only know one band I worked for, and that's Good Riddance. And they're like, oh, well, we can't really tell you it's Good Riddance, but if it was, would you? It's like, so, and then they just kept playing and having rad shows. And then same thing, they put a new album out just what this year. So, and that's so, there's a time, right? There's a circle of life for bands for their importance in music. And now is the time where people are like, whatever happened, or wonder what became of. And that's an amazing thing, right?
I think you're right. Everybody has different experiences, but I know for us, like when that band split up, I started This As a Standoff right away. So I just kind of kept going with it. And the other guys didn't. And one of Graham, the drummer, was playing with me, and this is a standoff. But the other guys had bands locally, but weren't doing a lot of touring. And it's everybody kind of does it a different way, So, but it all felt really great when we all got back together again. And for me, I think it's really cool when bands like Good Riddance, take some time away. And maybe we all thought that we were going to break up for good. Then you realize it wasn't that. We just went too hard. And I know how much they used to tour because I was out there touring, I'd see their posters, and we were down in the States for 3 months at a time. And I just think that you got to come back and play music because you like it, not because of whatever opportunity or whatever. I think, when it comes back like that, and like I feel like it is for our band, I feel like that's it's really special, and I think fans respond to it.
It's all the work you put into it in the past. When people come to you and say, "You know what? That's an amazing band you had, and I wish I could hear more of it." It's the form of flattery that it's like, well, it's not just for me now. I mean, I don't know the terms on what Belvedere, when there was a split, I don't know if it was good or bad. I mean, that's not even important. All it is that you guys took a break, and I know what it's like to be in a band with a bunch of people that I've known for a long time or whatever, or stay a bunch of time with you, gather a bunch of luggage, people get their own isms. And so the fact that you can sort of let all that slide based on the fact that, well, you know what, we're getting a lot of people that are interested in this band, and if they're interested, maybe I should be interested in too, right?
We like I say, I was touring with Standoff, so I was going to Europe a lot, and people were saying, would you ever think about Belvedere coming back together again? And I didn't know if I would for a while, but I figured there would be, some people that would be interested, but what I didn't know was how widespread it was, and I just feel really lucky that's.
And plus, when you're on tour with your new band, and someone's like, "Tell me about your old band that you were in. I want to know." It's like, well, I'm trying to pitch this
That
band.
took a while to shake that. Yeah, I mean, we kind of went a few ways ourselves. Like, we were able to make our own thing going with Standoff. But yeah, I mean, the first couple of years, it was definitely a lot of Belvedere baggage. That's good though. That's why people come out to see you, and I never took it wrong. We never played Belvedere songs, but I always thought it was great that people would give us a chance because they like the other band. And you take a few steps forward. I mean, our first tour was to Europe. I mean, that's that, it's that never would have happened if I was starting from scratch. And so I've always felt very lucky that I've made really good relationships and connections with people on social media and through the tours and stuff, where I feel like I'm seeing a lot of friends on tour now. It's not just playing show in X town. I get to see people that I haven't seen in a few years, so it's really great.
Yeah, I know. I did something in 2012. I went over and I brought some friends, and we did some of my band's songs, and I think it was 9 days, and we played like four shows. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a holiday for everybody.
That's
And
awesome.
you kind
Well,
of
good
put
for
it,
you.
thank you. And you put it in a perspective to say, well, I love music. I'm not going to be Bon Jovi, but who wants to be Bon Jovi, really? Except for Bon Jovi wants to be Bon Jovi again one
He
day.
does. He does all right.
He does okay. But the fact is that you've put it into a different compartment. As you get older, you start understanding, well, I love music, and what am I going to do to keep playing music because I love it, And
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, good for you, man, because it's a tough road. It's a tough road.
It is. Yeah, and it's still it's a lot of coordination. It takes up a lot of time. But I'm happy to do it. But it's I mean, when you think of we would go for 100-day tours in the States, and more often than not, we'd sleep in the van or sleep on a floor. And I think, at the best of times, we had 40 or 50 people. I'll never forget that stuff. That plays in my mind when we're playing these festivals in front of thousands of people. And I go, I still remember that stuff, like, I just it all still really means a lot.
It makes the reward sweeter too, right? Because the work you've put
It
into
does.
it pays back, not div in money, but it pays back in respect from the people that, And the other thing too is people who loved Belvedere in the early 2000s, they're parents now. You know what I mean? They're like us. You know what I mean? Like, and to get out and see a punk rock show is just getting out is tough. Just getting out the door is a tough thing to
That's
do,
true.
right? Because you have obligations, you have a job, you have kids, you have things, and just making time. to go out into a show, you know, and doesn't start really, you know, my kids are 13 and 9 and I still like to stay home. Like, look at me, I'm a fucking hermit. But you
Some
know,
good guitar cases back there. I
I
like
got a
that.
few. Yeah, I got the I got nothing special. But no, I
Nice.
don't. Wait, thieves. No, wait, no, I don't. I got nothing here. I got Epiphone Junior. You'll love it. Now, I wish I had an album. I was asking for something to play, but I got nothing to play. So maybe you could send me a link and I could play something at the start or something, and then we'll you know.
Yeah, give me a sec here. Maybe not a link, but maybe I can email you a song here.
Yeah, for sure. Because I know there was a download. Was there a free download? Or no, I think the download codes ran out by the time I by the time I tried to
Oh yeah, that was keep talking here, I'll find you something. I got some download codes here actually.
Oh, cool. Well, you can send it in the link. There's a little chat window on this in this function. You can just send it there. And but while we're doing this though, what do you think of like is all your band, so wait, your whole band's in Calgary again now?
Yeah, everybody's in Calgary, so it's nice because our drummer Casey, he has a studio, and that's where we did a lot of our tracking, well, all of our tracking, and so we're able to jam there pretty frequently, you know, which is really great. So we've never been like a band that can actually do a lot of jamming. So now this is kind of a special thing, and really, we probably wouldn't have been able to do that, you know, do this album if we weren't able to do things part time and jump into the studio.
Yeah, what you're saying too is by recording is that now you can take your time because the industry has brought the recording industry is now in our grasp where we can make great sounding records on a laptop. And there's some studios that would think, oh, it's not a good thing. You need to come to a real studio. But I completely wholeheartedly disagree with that. As a proponent of home recording for all these years, I think it's,
That's right.
you know, it's important that bands take that into their own hands and make great records and use people that they need to use, but other musicians, you know, because something, you know, the whole industry of being a producer and making records for bands, I don't know. I think the bands should be able to do it themselves. Like this now.
Yeah. And you know, like, I mean, we're also lucky too, is it, not only does he have, I mean, that's his job. Like, he has a studio in his basement. So, I mean, not his basement, his garage. And so he's been doing that for, you know, for over a decade, if not longer. So, you know, he's already doing that all the time. So tracking with him was great. Everything was set up, and, you know, he's got a really, cost-effective studio anyways for anybody that walks in there, but certainly for us. And, you know, we spent the better part of 2 months doing little 3, 4 hour segments at a time because that was all we could really do.
What I heard of it is, well, I only heard one song because you only put one song that I heard of, and it sounds phenomenal.
Thank
Like,
you. Yeah, we tracked it with Casey at his studio, and then we mixed it at the Blasting Room in Colorado. So we did it with Andrew Berlin,
okay,
and
yeah.
then Jason mastered it. So yeah, it was yeah.
It's
We
massive.
definitely had good people working on it, so.
Yeah, well, that's sort of that's the way to do it. Cost effectiveness is the way to do it. You know, I recorded a band. They took it to New York and mastered it, and it sounds huge. It sounds like something I didn't record because they, you know, they went somewhere and did it with like a mastering guy, and it sounds great. That is the way. I mean, like I said though, it is the cottage industry of recording bands. Like there was a lot of little 4-track studios and little tiny maybe computer recording started in the early 2000s, you know, consumer based, but it was all down to like real studios, you know. You know, you had a 4-track or you had ADATs. I think ADATs kind of changed the whole industry in the 90s and things like that. And
I did a record on Ada for
yeah,
sure.
I bet you've probably done a record on every format available. Yeah, like you 2-inch
Yeah,
tape.
because we, yeah,
Yeah.
1-inch tape, one of those old Roland 8-tracks. Our first album, we did that on there. I think that cost us the cost of a drum mic, I think, is what we paid for that one. And then you know, that we actually went into some studios, and we also dropped a shit ton of money on recordings that don't, you know, stand up compared to what comes out now. And
Yeah.
what you can do in a home studio or something, you know.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, I've seen the different formats evolve, that's for sure.
Like, what do you think of like correcting mistakes and or versus beat detective versus just making it sound good, feel right, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess every band's different. We've never been much for the beat detectives and quantizing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we definitely, you know, record to click tracks for our albums, but at the same time, our drummer Casey generally doesn't like to play to click tracks. He likes the feel of everything, and he'll also go in there and you know, make little corrections to the beats per minute because he wants the feel to be right and stuff. You know, he's a seasoned drummer that can do that kind of stuff and spent a lot of time doing that. But yeah, I mean, I like things to sound really good as a band. I mean, you got to be tight as a band and you have to bring that energy. And if it, I feel that if you just micro sort of fix every little thing and every little, you know, whatever, it just takes the soul out of a record. So, I mean, I want the records to sound good. I want them to sound big, but you know, auto tuning and all that stuff, it's just never really been our thing. I mean, you know, yeah, everybody does a little pitch correction here and there and stuff, but you, for the most part, you know, it's like, well, sing the part right, or you know, play the guitar right, or just, you know, do the takes until you get it right.
I
And
think,
we had the luxury of that time to get things right.
yeah, I think your voice, there's certain voices that don't take auto tune well. And I know the tone, and I don't hear auto tune in your voice, but I know that if you were to auto tune, you'd hear it more than most. There's certain pretty, like if it was super raspy, like you wouldn't really catch the auto tune. But my voice, nasal, ugh, you hear it everywhere, all over the place. Like I sound like Cher. But I it's unfortunate because I'm sort of like, I like to fix stuff and I like stuff to be perfect. But I there was a time, like I came through all those eras too, where when someone started sampling a drum, it was this blatant over the top snare that was like, what the hell? That has no connection to what the drum kit is now. And I forget the guy's name, but who's the guy that did all the Strike Anywhere records? But he used samples. But he used samples in a way that you never even hear. You couldn't hear the difference between the real drum. And that to me, it was like he's fooling you, but at the same time, he's not getting in the way with technology.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about blending. I mean, even with like guitar tones and stuff, I mean, I can't love one guitar tone, but I sure love three of them and I sure love the best parts of it. So, you know, we blend them in, and I think you're right too. I think that samples have their place, but they shouldn't be the only place. I think that they should be a help and a boost to your natural sounds, but that's the whole point of spending time to get good tones across the board from drums up is you know, trying to get the natural tones of the instrument.
Remember when death metal found triggers? When they were doing
And they haven't forgotten
no, they still don't. And like there's even
them.
modern like there's this modern punk rock, like modern emo or whatever. I don't want to call it emo, but it's technical metal with a guy singing over top of it. And it's just like the drum sounds are out of this, like unnatural. Like there's something, like how can you expect me to believe that's a guy playing those drums? There's no way that's
It's
happening.
actually going, it's going from a drum set to pots and pans. But people don't realize that we're doing so much like, you know, triggers and everything too. It's actually starting to sound like pots and pans that I played when I was 3 years old in like my kitchen. And
There's
they're
a
like, oh, dude, have you seen those drums? Like, yeah, it sounds like, you know, that ice cream pail I used to hit.
I had a train of thought, but I think the idea of trying to make something so perfect is getting in the way of, there's going to have to be a kickback soon. And I think, you know, I feel like you're on that verge. And I know there's other bands too that I've been talking to who are on this verge of saying it doesn't need to be perfect. I interviewed Ron Hawkins from Lowest of the Low, singer, and he uses recording on a computer like a tape machine. So when he hits record, he destructively records. He never even keeps what the old take underneath is, you know, because you can just take multiple takes, undo, undo, undo. He turned that function off. So he treats it like a tape machine. So I think there's this push to making albums that sound like albums played by people, and I welcome it, right?
I mean, like, again, I mean, I'm really proud of this record, and I think it sounds better than anything we've ever done before. And we've certainly, there's, you know, there's a lot of wizardry that goes into this stuff with on the mixing as well as the tracking. But the thing that always got me is that, like, the bands that you hear these new records and you're like, man, they're so good, and you go and see them and it's just like, you know, I don't want that to happen. I don't want it to be where there's 50 Def Leppard vocals and then nobody can ever pull it off live, and then
Yeah.
you're like, ah, you know, I don't really like them anymore. They're not really that good. That just sets you up for failure, I think.
Yeah, you guys always, you always played it live, and you always sounded like your record. That was a very strong point. I you know, from seeing you live, I think a few times, but there was
Thank
like
you.
a lot of it's your voice too. At the same time, your voice is so distinctive that it's like you can tell it's a Belvedere song as soon as you know, as soon as well, it's the riffing too is pretty insane, right? Like, have you,
Thanks a lot.
were you a metal kid? Were you ever like, what was your like,
I Scott was, and Jay was a hardcore kid, and
yeah.
you know, Casey likes everything. I mean, I like everything, but
Sure.
I no, I mean, I was a pop punk guy and a skate punk guy,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was all Bad Religion and NOFX. I mean, I had my early days with Metallica and Megadeth in the late 80s, but it was pretty short-lived. Once I found Dead Kennedys and Bad Religion, I was kind of like, this is my music. These guys can do stuff that I can, and I can play it, you know. I can't do that other shit.
The I like the fact when people discover, like, I've talked to so many people who discovered the Ramones, and that was a big part of their life, and that's how, and these are people that are 20 years older than me, and that's a big part in their life when they discovered the Ramones, and they laughed at it because they thought it was funny. The fact that you discover this music that you can play, like you say, and these are played by people that kind of look like me, and that is, you know, what was the first, when did you see Bad Religion for the first time? What was, would have been
Well, I didn't
hard,
see him
right?
for quite a while. I didn't
Yeah.
see him for quite a while. Like I, you know, because being out in the West here, we didn't really get them out here unless you're in Vancouver. So I remember in the early 90s, I'd heard No Control, and then really got into Suffering Against the Grain. But I don't think I saw them until 98. They came up to Edmonton, and they played with SNFU and Choke, and it was this big deal at like Shaw Conference Center.
I mixed this
And
in a few that day.
exactly, yeah, I
Yeah,
know. And
yeah.
and then a year later, we toured Canada with them. So it was like, you know,
Yeah.
that, so I went from never seeing them to seeing them
Every
all
night.
the time,
Yeah.
and it was awesome. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I still got that poster. It's the only poster I have in my basement,
Really?
where all my cars are. Is that that Calgary show from that tour?
That's
Because
crazy.
that meant a lot.
When I played in Trigger Happy, we opened for Bad Religion at the Spectrum, and I met Jay Bentley, and we talked for, you know, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes. Cut to 4 years, 3 years later, I'm working for SNFU. I'm in LA, and I go, Jay Bentley, hi, Jay Bentley. You don't remember me? He goes, no, I remember you from Toronto, right? You're playing Trigger. That guy has got a fucking memory. And it wasn't like I made a big impact or I, you know, he just has a memory of things. And then cut to early 2000s, maybe 2002. I saw him at a guitar shop. I go, hey, Jay Bentley, you won't remember me? Oh, you used to work for SNFU. And I was like, what the hell? This guy is like a, yeah. That impressed me. I thought that was very cool.
Those guys are great. They
Yeah.
we did a couple of shows and a tour with them, and you just always feel like when you kind of run into them that they're just kind of, I don't know. Sometimes there's always time, a bit of standoffish time, like, oh, I don't know. But those guys were always really great, and Jay in particular has been, you know, really awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, ultimately has been one of the guys that's really helped us, you know, get on those shows with Bad Religion,
Sure.
as well with Brian. You know, Brian did one of our we did a split CD, and we recorded it with him in DC. And yeah, they've just always been really supportive. So we don't run into them as much as we used to kind of around that time. But you know,
I
I think
saw
it's really great.
them, I was on tour, I was doing some shows at Good Riddance, and we did Montebello Rock Fest. And I saw Brooks Wackerman play, I think maybe for the second or third time, but I'm so sad he's not in the band anymore. Because
Who's playing with them now?
I
I
don't,
saw them, but I don't
I
recognize
can't
them.
remember who it is. I know Pfeiffer was, Darren Pfeiffer was going to try out for them or did try out for them or something. But the fact that he could
I'm sure they
play
had a long
those,
list.
he, and I said, and I was, had a few drinks that night, and I said, you're jamming Bad Religion. That's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Because he was basically playing around Bad Religion songs and still keeping obviously to the form of the song. But his fills were out of this world. Like, I couldn't believe it. Oh, what a great drummer.
No, Brooks is great.
Yeah, I can't remember who's playing drums now. But they actually, Hetson's not in the band anymore, right? Hetson's gone?
No, he's not. My wife and I flew down to LA maybe like a year and a half ago. We saw the show at the Palladium with Pennywise and stuff. And I think he wasn't playing with them back then as well. So he was at the show.
They got a guy
He's
who kind of looks like him, though. Kind of looks like Greg.
Yeah, it's with that guy from the cult, I think.
Yeah, he's kind of far away, and you're like, that could be Greg. That could be Hudson. He's a little too tall for Hudson because Hudson's what, 3'2"? But yeah. So what's the record isn't out yet, right? Well, it will be out, what, May 1st? May?
Yeah, well, the fifth, yeah, well,
The
somewhere
fifth.
around there. We might get it out early. We'll see what happens. But yeah, we're not the best for release dates, you know. But no, so it's supposed to be May 5th. But we had this deal with our web store that if you ordered it online, you'd get it 5 days early. So
Okay,
early.
cool.
So that's coming up in May, and first album in 12 years. So we're stoked.
That is a long wait. That is a long wait for people. I've just seen just from comments from people, and it's like they're you can almost see them orgasming. You're like, this, oh my God, is this like, hell froze over. This is great, And
Oh, that's awesome.
yeah, so I mean, it's very cool that you have I've known you for years, but we don't really talk. So I mean, obviously, because like but we just know that we were in this same scene for a while, and we
We
still
should do this every Friday. We should catch up. I'm sure we have
every
lots
Friday it'll be
to catch
Steve's part, like in
up.
every part of the episode will come in. You know what I'm actually impressed with this is that we're not in old guy time yet. Where it's like, remember back in the
No.
old days, the kids don't do anything anymore.
I got a couple of years before I'm in that. Yeah, I'm good.
You could play that, it's like the yeah, I really appreciate it. And what you said before, and I have to you said like I feel like I'm 18 years old again, and that that's good to hear. And it tells me that there's a reason why you guys did it. It wasn't just the fact that, oh, it's our turn, it's cash grab or any of that stuff. It's like let's do this 'cause it feels right, And it's sort of the same reason why a band like Propaganda just keeps putting records out. Like they don't need to. Like, you know what I mean? Like they just keep putting records out, and it takes a while, and then it comes out, and the record's always amazing. And they do it because it's time for the record to come out. Like they don't follow anybody's rules, and they just do what feels right, and that's very cool.
No, it's true, because you'd think, well, every year and a half, 2 years, you should put out a record because that's what you do. But they don't put it out until they're happy with it, and that says a lot.
Did you ever get into that sort of struggle where you had to, oh, we need to write an album now. This is the time to do this, like in the earlier days?
I mean, especially like because that was our full-time job for a while, and it was well, the job pays, so I shouldn't call it a job, but but we were in that touring cycle. We were in that touring cycle. It was like, okay, we put out this record, we're gonna go to Europe, we're gonna go to the States, we're gonna do Japan, whatever, and then cool, now it's been out for a year and a half, let's start writing again, and we started getting into that like tour record cycle, and maybe that's part of the problem, and ultimately why we did split up is because there wasn't a lot coming back in terms of what it was doing for us. I just felt like we started getting into this like we were just this machine kind of like touring and whatever, and it lost a little bit of that magic that why I started a band in the first place, and I think we all felt it. So when we all said we were done, I mean, I'm not going to say we split up on the best of terms. We didn't, but I think we all still agreed that we'd had enough.
Yeah, when you say 12 years ago, 12 years ago wasn't a good time for punk rock, too. It wasn't a good time. It was a horrible time. There's times where bands I know, like we're on tour and just getting no love. And it was a time, I don't know what happened, if it was the economy or if it was the actual industry turned on itself and said, we don't want to have this anymore. We're done. Like we want to have more new country, or we want, I don't know. They just came up with some other reason and somewhere else to go because people are just essentially butterfly chasers. They'll just go, oh, look at that. Let's go over there and we'll chase that over there and see what happens, especially when it comes to the industry people. And they'll turn their back on you as fast as they can because we went through the mid-90s when punk rock was almost going to be the next, could have been the next Rolling Stones or whatever. It was out there.
That's probably how it was, but it really wasn't like that for us. We were kind of our own worst enemy. We were having some of the most successful tours that we had ever had. We had really great support from the Union Label Group and Jumpstart Records and all these label. We split up because we didn't want to be in a band with each other anymore. And all it took was kind of a crappy tour in Western Canada to finally go, yeah, this isn't going to work, but we, we just toured with Rise Against. We had just gone to Europe with Mad Caddies for like 40 dates, and it was like our biggest tour. And why would you stop then? But we did. So, I mean, in some ways, a lot of people thought that was good because we kind of stopped like at a good time. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, we just didn't want to do it anymore.
And plus going to Europe all the time. Did you feel like when you went to Europe and got more more admiration and more people like were really into your band, did you find more in Europe than say North America in general?
Maybe not Canada, but definitely in the States. We had a hard time in the States. Like we spent the better part of the late 90s touring the States, even the early 2000s, and it was good. Like but as you know, and as most bands know, that even American bands know, it's hard to tour the States. It gets to the point where maybe we could make it work if we were American, but the fact is that we had to spend thousands of dollars on a work permit, and getting the van down there, and like it's tough to tour past Chicago in the Midwest, like, I mean, there's some great, we had some great following in a lot of places in some of those small states, but it got to be the point where it was so expensive for us to tour the States. And, we weren't playing, we were playing, shows were getting better, but it wasn't anything crazy that could really keep us rolling. And we started going to Europe, and all of a sudden we were just, people were there. They were, they were good sized shows. People were buying merch. They were, it became where we could actually go to Europe and come back with rent money, which we never do when we toured the States. So it, you starts, that starts to play in your mind too. It's like, well, how am I gonna afford my apartment,
When I went to
especially when you're out, and some people might go, I sorry to interrupt, but some people might go, oh, well, it's not about money. Well, it is about money when you're gone 300 days a year.
you need of course.
It's not all about that, but like, someone's got to pay that $500 a rent for that couch.
It's a business and you have to run it like a business. And just because you're in a punk rock band doesn't mean you can't behave like it's a reputable business. Because you're running it like it's your business. Everybody has a job, and if they don't do their job, then something suffers. Whether your job you get paid for or not, like everybody has a job in a band, an independent band. They have to. Otherwise, you have dissension and some guy just gets paid the same amount of money because he just sat in the back of the van all day. No, that doesn't work. So everybody needs a job. And what I noticed is when I went to Europe and I was at 32, went for the first time. People didn't care about age. They didn't care about your looks. They didn't care about, there was no image-based rock and roll there that I could see. And there was no music television. I don't know what it's like now, but there was, it seemed like people didn't really care. And my big joke, and I haven't brought this one out in a while, but they had the Scorpions. Look at those guys. They were old, even in the 80s, they were old. And look at them, they're playing the Megadome in Munich somewhere, probably right now.
Well, I mean, even still, like, I mean, Europe's great and I love going to Europe. Truthfully, I would like to go down to the States, but it is increasingly even more difficult now than it was. I feel bad because we still sell a decent amount of albums in the States, and I know there's people down there that want to see the bands, and I don't care about like, the size of the show or whatever. I just want to play for people that want to hear your band. But it is really tough for us to get to California after dropping, $2,000 to $3,000 on a work permit. It just is. We're not playing in front of 500 people down there. Maybe if we were, that would make the logistics of it easier. But especially when a band like us, when we can only go for 4 or 5 days, we have to recoup that money back in 4 or 5 days. We can't spread it out over a 6-week tour. So I don't know. Anyway, we're probably airing out lots of like, business band laundry here, but it kind of breaks my heart a bit because I would love to tour the States, but it's too hard.
I think now I might be talking to my ass, but I think they allowed the Canadians open the border up a little bit to allow Americans to come in and do America like play as Americans. But
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if it's reciprocated at both ends. And I thought it was like I thought as of January that they had lowered the work fee. But then I interviewed somebody who's like, no, we had to apply for it like 8 months in advance. And all that stuff. And you can imagine trying to book a show. I mean, you can book a show in 8 months in advance, but the level I'm at, like when it's Bob in his basement, like he's like, well, I don't even know if I'm gonna be living here in 8 months. You know what I mean? Like I can't, I got no, proof.
Thankfully, Canada got rid of those fees, and mostly it's just a couple of pieces of paper for foreign bands to tour here. But no, it's tougher down there.
There's something glorious about flying into Frankfurt with your guitar in your
Yeah.
hand, and you give them, you say, "Hello, I'm Canadian." They go, "Hello, come on in." They don't give you any like
No.
grief. They stamp your passport and they go, "Move along." You're like, "Wait, is this a trap? Am I gonna get pulled aside or taken away?" It's
Yeah, no.
glorious, glorious.
It's true. You fly in there and you say, they say, "What are you doing?" You say, "I'm playing music," and you kind of go, "Ooh." And then they go, "Great. We're happy to have you. Thanks. Welcome to Europe."
Yeah, because we know you're not going to be making that much money. I mean, we're more
Yeah.
worried about, we'll pull Bon Jovi over. See, there's a benefit of not being Bon Jovi for once. There you go.
Yeah, he doesn't, you don't need that kind of stress.
No, sure. I and touring plans. Do you have any of that stuff? Speaking of touring, are you gonna?
Yeah, we do. We're doing Calgary and Edmonton on a weekend, and then a few weeks later, we're going to do Toronto, London, and Montreal. We're going to do Pooza Fest,
Oh,
and
cool.
then we go to at the end of June, we go to Europe for 4 days. We're doing a show with NOFX in Nantes, France. We've got a show in France that's getting worked out right now, and then a festival with Pennywise and Zebrahead in Holland, and then our own show in Belgium. So it'll be real quick, and that's pretty much that's. I mean, there's a couple other shows that we're kind of working out now, and
Yeah.
as you know, more things will come up, but that's kind of what's going on for the next couple months.
Where's do you have the web? You obviously have a website because that's your trade. What's
Oh yeah.
the website?
Belvedereband.com. I did
Cool.
that website in school and it's bad, but you know, enjoy.
I think I went to that website and I saw, hey, look at you. There's your design down there. It's no, is it
Very
web?
99.
Web? Yeah, web 2.0, web 0.2.0,
Yeah, it's
and
definitely a 96er, that's for sure.
but you've still
That's
bought the domain for that many years, so it means something, that's good.
right.
I got,
Yeah.
whatever. I think it's very, very cool that you're doing it and you're doing it for the love and you can still appreciate music for what it is. And you guys went through the ringer, you had if a band broke up under not so great terms, that alone is enough to sort of, sour your taste for music. So good for you. And you had this is standoff and all that, and it all just made sense that it would come back to Belvedere eventually, and here you are.
Yeah, no, we were just down in South America with the Adrenalized Mutant Lagwagon, and that was again one of those like pinch me kind of tours,
Yeah.
where you just kind of like every night you go out there and there's lots of people and you fly every morning and it's crazy, but you kind of go like I can't believe that this many years later that I'm able to still do that, and I the months will go by and I'll still be buzzing from that.
And it's on your terms. There's no, you got to do this, you got to do that. But I think that's what broke up my band. It's like people start telling us what to do. It's like, fuck off. I don't want to do that anymore. But
Hear you, man. Well,
I appreciate you coming on the show, man. And thanks so much for, doing this. We got to thanks Melanie K for hooking this up. She always hooks me up with great people. And it's so good to reconnect with you. And when's Toronto again? Just so let me know.
It's on May 21st at the cave.
The
Like, I think
cave.
it's in Lee's Palace.
Lee's
You know, Lee's
Pal. Oh,
Palace, right?
yeah. Oh, so upstairs, Dance Cave?
The upstairs one, yeah,
No
little
way, there's
room
a
up
venue
there.
up there? Gosh.
Yeah.
I went on my first date with my now wife there.
Oh, well, it'll be my first time there too.
Oh, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
Lee's is nice too.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show and all the luck and have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, you too. And thanks, Mel.
Steven Rawls. There he is. He's the singer from Belvedere. He says in a band called This Is a Standoff. That was a fun time. Good talk. Good talk. Everybody, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks to fetchclass.com. Thanks to insertrecorders.com. Don't forget about that download code thing, by the way. Like I said, if you're playing all these crappy little shows and you want to sell stuff and you want to sell something for cheaper because you're not actually selling an actual piece of hardware, you're selling a piece of software, let's talk. InsertRecorders.com. We'll get you a download code. We'll get you a page. And you know what? Quite honestly, screw Bandcamp and screw iTunes. Those guys aren't going to do shit for you, okay? Well, who will do shit for you is you. You're the one that can sell stuff, and you're the one that can actually make things happen. Okay, that's it. That's my soapbox moment. There you go. Musician's friend, everybody, go to these banners on the apolog.ca site. Musician's Friend is the place to go. Click on the banners, as well as Banggood, as well as Amazon. Amazon's a big important one, because Amazon is something that I think is kind of more legitimate than those other two crappy sites. But Amazon.com. You're shopping on Amazon. Amazon's so convenient. It'll drop stuff off. It sells everything, but I think exotic wood from the Amazon. I don't think it sells that. I think it's just bad press. Appalock.ca/shop is a place to go purchase a t-shirt. Go to pre-order my acoustic album that I'll eventually get done one day. It's, you know what, that I can't wait for you to all hear that album. It's going to be so good. I might even just make an EP. It's that good. I just think it's good. I was waiting on a few songs to come into my brain so I could put it onto the acoustic and then record it. I don't want to waste it, so I'll probably just put this out next month. Okay, so pre-order it. Hey, if you pre-order it, I'll send you a shirt. How about that? Make sense? Okay, good. No, I won't sell you a shirt. Screw that. You know what? Pre-order it, and then you'll get the music when I put it out. There you go. Bam. Patreon.com/Appalock is a place to sponsor, pledge to the show. Pledge as little as much as you want. Cancel anytime. Facebook.com/Appalock Pod is the place to like the show. Also, to get caught up on any news and see who future guests are, as well as get in a conversation and let's talk. If you want to be on the show, you can go there. Say, I want to be on the show, and I'll put you on the show. Believe me. Okay, every Monday we put the show out, and you go to iTunes to get it. So please rate and review the show. Give it some stars. 5 would be great. It really does, like I said, I can't stress this enough how important that is. Okay, follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. Next week, I have Brian Doherty from Big Wreck is on the show next week. We had a good talk. He is an amazing dude and a really good guitar player. Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. I'll see you next week. I'll be here. Bye.